is Kofi Kingston, and you're listening to the best of the New Day. Feel the power on Spotify.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
Welcome to the greatest podcast of all time, which is entitled The New Day.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I am Xavier Woods, a.k.a. Austin Creed.
My name is Big E, but I wasn't always Big E. I was once a man named Big E Langston, once a man who had a strong name attached at the end of Big E. Once a man of dignity, a man who could walk with his head high because he had a last name and a strong and proud last name, until one day some colonizer, yeah, I said a colonizer, and stole it from me like they're known to do. That's what they do. But yet, I will still forge on, yet I will still push on as Big E. That's who I am. Just Big E. For now.
For now. Who's to say where it could go? And I am Kofi Kingston. And today, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest on the hashtag.
Sorry, that's it though?
That's it. Yo, look, we got to do polar. No, because you have the long game, the long con. You know, it's like a yin and yang, or good cop, bad cop thing. You got the long, drawn out, you know.
Who's the bad cop?
I don't know. It's subjective, I suppose. I'm just saying, you know, like the antithesis and the thing. So what we have today is a very special guest on the hashtag New Day Pod. Somebody who I regard as the smoothest man that I've ever faced in a WWE ring. Yes, the smoothest. And I've faced a lot. And I don't mean just the skin.
Okay.
I'm talking about skill level. You know, although his skin was pretty soft, I'm talking about moves, doing things that are very difficult, very difficult, and making them look easy, like a cat. And the irony is that this man, he loves himself a good cat. As a matter of fact, he's got several cats.
I don't know if that's irony, though.
Yeah. Is it irony? It's coincidence. Is it coincidence or irony? The man that I'm introducing to you is a man who we have crossed paths with on several different levels as the New Day, and myself as just regular old Kofi Kingston. The man who I'm talking about is Tyson! Kid.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Welcome. 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 Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
A man whose pool I have also been in.
That's true.
Yes. Yes. Well, we should probably just stop it there. We can't. But yes.
That's my favorite story.
Yeah.
Well, let's start it off. Why not start it off?
Podcast ready.
I mean, we can.
Why not?
We talk about when I was dealing with Big E, and not in a negative way, exactly, but dealing with Big E 7 days a week for like 2 or 3 weeks straight. Repping you guys 5 days a week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I'm home, and you guys also were home Wednesdays and Thursdays. During those days, we're filming Total Divas. That week, at the time, Langston was already gone, but I still would like to refer to him as Mr. Langston. He was filming Total Divas. He's at my house on that Wednesday and Thursday. Then I see him at the airport bright and early at 6 a.m. on Friday for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, I'm wrestling Cesaro and Tyson Kidd against the New Day in every town that we could possibly get into. And then Big E's at my house again on Wednesday and Thursday. And I saw him at the airport on that following Wednesday, and I said, "Hey, E, no offense. I'm a little bit excited to not see you tomorrow." And he was a little bit sad, but I said, "That's not the way I mean it. I just mean I'm glad we kind of have a day off. But don't worry, I'll see you bright and early Friday morning to continue our schedule of Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday." So
very true. I think I also, they had the producers of Total Divas had me wear your pants, I think, as well, the Lululemon pants.
Dude, and a shirt. And the best part was I wore that shirt and I got like cat ears sewn onto the hood. And I wore them out to the ring, and I'll leave them nameless, but somebody very high up in the company told me that I shouldn't be wearing those. He's like, "Hey, I saw you wear a hoodie with cat ears on it. I recommend you don't wear that, because next thing you know, they're going to have you drinking milk out of a saucer on Raw." Like,
It's not wrong.
Great advice.
Yeah.
Not wrong. That was probably going to happen next. And I remember saying, well, it beats the alternative of not being booked. I mean, it's quite a few steps above that. Anyway, so the shirt was like in this drawer. I took his advice and was like, okay, I'll follow his advice. Dude, I come home from the gym and I come back and he's wearing not only my pants, but he's wearing that shirt with the hood up. And that shirt's tight on me. And Big E's like 100 pounds here, but I'm like 180 pounds. How does the shirt fit Big E? I have no idea, man. I came home and E has like flour on him. He's baking and he's got the shirt on. Like I said, the shirt tight on me. How the hell does Big E fit it?
Right. So when you're gone from home and you walk in your house and the first thing you see is not only E like in your kitchen baking, but E's also wearing your clothes. Like what goes through your head?
Before anything go through my head, he's like, "What's up, Teach? What's up, Teach?" So then just like I knew we were filming Total Divas. I honestly that day I didn't know E was coming over in the morning. I thought I'd probably see him later on. I honestly did not think E was going to be at my house when I came back from the gym. But I just was taken back by the fact that he was also wearing my clothes.
I get it. I will say you're a very patient man, because if I walk into my house and someone is in my house and wearing my clothes, there's got to be hell to pay. Got to be hell to pay. And you were very cool with this, so I appreciate that.
You imagine Big E walked into his house and I'm in there wearing a singlet. Yeah.
What's up, E? The best part is like the baking is such a random thing to say, but like that's what was happening. That's what
we're doing, yeah. Yeah. Pants and the shirt were both black and it had like flour all over, like there was flour all over the place.
Yeah, it's a terrible out of time. Very strange.
But actually it's funny too, Kofi's point of saying like these different incarnations, true. Like my tryout match for WWE is against Kofi. Then I wrestled him. I was unsigned. Then I got signed, my work visa, all this process. I come back to Deep South. And then I wrestled Kofi. My first, TV match in Deep South under contract is against Kofi. And then, like, of course, we've done iterations of singles matches, tag matches, all the way to me being a producer. And I was actually supposed to produce Kofi and Bryan at WrestleMania. Yeah, for the, Kofi Mania. Was originally, that was my match originally.
Did you boycott? Did you boycott? And just said,
I've had enough of this guy.
I was like, listen, if Kofi's winning, I'm out.
Oh my God.
I tried to do what I can to bust up New Day. I thought you winning the title. It was just that strength. If he's winning the title, I'm out. And I thought I had enough leverage to finish change. I didn't. I just got myself taken out.
Well, it's either him or me. All right. Let's switch up the producer. Oh, okay. But hey, just to take it back, man, to the first match that we had in Deep South. I don't know if you remember, but this was like, so they actually grouped me with a girl named Lala, and you were with Natty, obviously. And the only thing that me and Lala had in common was that we were African American human beings. So that was it. So I remember just being like, oh, this is so random that we're like together. And we cut this promo. It was a weird promo that we cut beforehand, and and I don't even know what I was talking about, but it wasn't very good. So it was such a pleasure to be in there like with you and have the match that we had. And have it just kind of like overshadow all like the negative day. And nothing against Lala. I love Lala, but we just had no...
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? We just had no business being like, what are we doing? You know what I'm saying? But we had this amazing match and, did some pretty innovative things in there. And like I said, that was the first time where like I realized like, man, I'm not that good at this, because like you were just so smooth. You know what I'm saying? Like I've never been in the ring with anybody that is just you can do it all. You know what I'm saying? From like technical things to high flying things to, getting up on the corner and being funny and celebrating and all that. But also at the same time, like being mean and whatnot, too. So. I just appreciated the well-roundedness, and I'm so glad and fortunate that like, we were kind of interlinked throughout our careers throughout.
A lot. I mean, you're a huge part of like my WWE career for sure. And it was very cool for me to wrestle you that first one where I'm under contract because like I wrestled you on my tryout. You and I had a singles match. And then, so then to come back and then in that exact same building, same thing, like now that I don't know. It's weird. Like for me, I guess when you're doing a tryout and then to be signed are two very different things. And now I know like this, when I'm under contract, like now at that time, Deep South's going to be, I guess, for lack of a better term, my home. And so now you got to try to like, before it's just a tryout and it's a bunch of strangers, but now these strangers are about to be the people that you're with every day, 5 days a week at least. So like, it was cool to be able to wrestle you. It felt as I was brand new to Deep South, but it felt familiar because that's who I wrestled on my tryout match. And I just right off the bat, I could tell that you're a very like a cool person and very easy to be around and very easy to wrestle. So it was like, okay, cool. I wrestled on my tryout. I was very nervous then. I'm still nervous, but a different type of nervous. It just helped ease me into everything, really. And then same with the FC, and then we transitioned to FCW like a month later.
Yeah. And I think too, so like, we're talking about like getting to know each other, right? And one of the like defining moments where I knew that I liked you was we were doing a film review, like after a show, and Jody Hamilton, the assassin, was critiquing like one of the matches. And he's asking about like, you'll tell the story better than I do, but like a revolver. Using a revolver versus a machine.
Yeah.
You want to tell the story?
Yeah, so Deep South had a lot of rules. There were a lot of rules to the matches. Like the first four matches that weren't going to be televised usually weren't allowed to do a lot of stuff. They were very, handcuffed. Maybe the pretty extreme version of it. But they had certain rules. Anyway, I wrestled Brian Cage, who wasn't under contract at the time. And Dr. Tom, it turns out to be the last show at Deep South. And I think Dr. Tom knew that. And he kind of told me to kind of go a little bit all out and kind of, he said, like, display my stuff and help Brian get signed. So I thought, I'd only been there for 4 weeks or 3 weeks or something at that time. And I was like, okay, I'll do my best to help get this guy. I just got signed. I'll do my best to help this guy out too. So we planned, it was a babyface match. We kind of thought like certain rules didn't really apply to us. So we just tried to go all out and I tried to be like, if we're going to showcase what I can do and what Brian can do, here's what it looks like in my mind. And I presented that. Anyway, the next day we're watching film and we watched the match. We press pause. Then Jody swings his chair and he looks at me and he's like, if I shoot a machine gun, how many bullets is that? And I look, and there's 30 pairs of eyes looking at me. And now I'll also set this up by wherever I go, I start out really, really quiet. Really quiet. Then I figure out the surroundings. Usually takes me like a month or two, three. And then like over time, I start to introduce you to the real piece.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
But first I keep that guy inside for a bit, and I'm very quiet and cautious and aware. So anyway, I got 30 eyes looking at me, 30 pairs of eyes, and I'm like, oh my, is there? So the way everybody's looking at me, I'm thinking there's a real answer to this. Honestly, I'm like, AK, is it called an AK-47 because it's 47 bullets? I'm sitting there trying to figure out like on the fly this. And I looked and then I was like, I didn't even know where this answer came from. And I just said, I'm from Canada and we can't legally get guns. So I don't play with guns. I don't know. And that was the reaction. Everybody left even more. And I was like, but I know I have to kind of suppress this guy inside of me for now. I'm still not in too soon. If I pull out a gun and I go bang, 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 how many is that? And I was like, three. And he's like, so what would you rather use? And I was thinking, what's the situation? Basically, I'm trying to take out an army of zombies because I'd rather have the machine gun than the handgun. I remember being like, everybody laughed. I know it's going to egg me on. I don't want to get into where all of a sudden me and the guy who's the boss of these shows. Everybody. So I just was like, I said, yeah, I see your point. I didn't answer because it would have been a lie and I'd try not to. So I just was like, I see your point.
Nobody did. What does that even mean? You know? Oh my God. But yeah, hey, bro, you talked about like Deep South having a lot of rules. One particular rule that I always, even to this day, we talk about in a match, Jody Hamilton said, never kick a man in the ass. Yeah. They're not laughing with you. They're laughing at you. Oh, okay.
for the 1 month I was there, a lot of the sayings are like things that are in my head a lot in terms of like, you know, our little jokes and stuff. They stir in the slop. A lot of inside things that like we know from being there that maybe aren't always repeatable, but
yeah.
What's crazy is so after WWE pulled out of Deep South, they like restarted it just like as this like a small indie in the area. So that's where me and my guys would wrestle. And so it's funny because I'll hear people who are in Deep South talk about like sayings and phrases. I'm like, I only saw them one day a week, if that. And I already know all these jokes. Like, my God, this is wild.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of recycled material that
changed. But like, it works. It clearly works. Yeah, it's stuck in everybody's head.
So he was right.
Yeah.
Jody.
to that point, so everything that we've talked about so far, I feel like you always have like 10 extra details on a story that like aren't in my head, and you have this weird like photographic memory for like every situation you've ever been in life. Has it always been like that, or was it once you started wrestling?
No, I think it's always been like that. So like times when I would actually like do my homework or study for a test, I'd do really well because it would be fresh and I could like recall it. And then, so it hasn't always just been wrestling. It's just that wrestling took so much of my focus. I was telling somebody the other day, like even at one time in school, I remember sitting there, I'm in biology class, but instead I'm writing all the different ways that I can work somebody's leg. And I'm in like 11th grade. I couldn't tell you one single thing that happened in that biology class, but I could almost tell you like what my paper looked like. And I'm just sitting in class, just like recalling these Bret Hart matches, like, okay, Brett did this move to Razor Ramon's leg. So that's something you can do. I'm just sitting there. I don't know why. Why at 16 am I sitting there writing out? Hey, I'm not writing out like, tornado DDT from the top rope to the floor. Like, why am I not writing the craziest? Like, I can dissect the guy's leg like this. It's who knows, man. I don't understand. But yes, my memory's always, for whatever weird reason, been like that.
So were you training at the time? When did you start training? At what age?
Yeah, I started when I was like 14, and I had my first match at 15.
Is that like a normal thing in that area?
It isn't, but Teddy and I both started at the same age. And then like Then you got a guy like Harry, whose first match was at 8 years old. So it almost sounds like it's normal when it's like brought into like such a small group like that. But otherwise, no. Otherwise, like 18. No one really under 18 came to the dungeon outside of like the three of us.
So obviously, like, we've heard stories about the dungeon. I'm curious what it was like to be there so young, especially if it wasn't like a regular thing for people that young to be in that situation.
It was very intimidating and very scary, very, very scary. Wrestling like these big dudes, you know, 300 pound guy. Not that everybody was, but there were big 300 pound guys, or these guys that were brand new, fresh from amateur wrestling. These guys were our amateur wrestling coaches. They would coach us on Saturday mornings, and then they would come to the dungeon. Like, we trained from like 8 till 10 amateur wrestling. Then we drive up to the dungeon at like from 11, and we would do training in the dungeon. And so like, these are amateur wrestlers that, like, one of the guys was close to being a national champion in Canada. So like, they're not understanding the art of wrestling yet. So like, they're just throwing me around. It was very scary, very intimidating. And a lot of people might think, you know, being close to the family, or, you know, like Harry and Teddy being a part of the family might make things easier, but it wasn't. It actually, I think we had it a little bit harder. I think, like, I definitely didn't have it any easier in the dungeon than anybody else. I wouldn't say I had it the hardest of anybody, but I had it just as hard as everybody else. I didn't have like an easy ride, which I think shows in my work. If it was easy, then at some point in WWE gets pretty hard. So if I didn't have it hard prior, I would have quit at some stage down the road.
So I feel like everybody has like a memory of when they became a wrestling fan, but I feel like you've been doing it so long, but clearly there was a point. Like, was there a point where you were like, just like gripped in, or has it just always been like a part of you and a part of your family? And you know what I mean? Like, how did you get into wrestling?
So initially my cousin showed me some wrestling, and for whatever reason in my mind, it's funny. I went on YouTube to see if this match exists. It does exist, whether this is the match I saw or not, but Demolition versus Killer Bees for some reason really stuck out. But then I went home and I wanted to try some wrestling moves out on my younger sisters, which didn't fly so well. And wrestling became a banned TV show in my house. So I wasn't allowed to watch wrestling. No. I watched like one or two episodes, really enjoyed it. They didn't have the disclaimer, don't try this at home back in the day.
Yeah.
So then I Teddy Hart befriended me when we were 10 years old. And then his whole family is so involved in wrestling that all of a sudden I was just surrounded by it. And SummerSlam 1992, Bret versus Davey Boy is like the single matchup where I something clicked and I was like, okay, this, I didn't realize wrestling could look like this. This is what I'm going to do. And why that gripped me at 12 years old, that technical match like that, I can't explain it. Besides, at that point, actually, I don't think I'd even met Bret. I'd met Davey, but I hadn't met Bret yet. Just that old schedule, just like you didn't see them very often. They weren't home very often.
So when you said that you guys were amateur wrestling in the dungeon as well, is that kind of where your love for MMA came from, just having training in that background as well? Or was that also something that you were just kind of into?
A bit of both. So do you know the movie Best of the Best and Best of the Best 2?
Of course. That's the first movie that ever made me cry.
Okay, so Teddy and I were very obsessed with Best of the Best 2. We're really obsessed with the Brackus guy who does the guillotine. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Teddy calls me one day. This is, of course, pre-cell phones. And he said, you got to come to my house. I just rented this tape from Blockbuster. It's like real life Best of the Best 2. I was like, what is that? They're fighting underground. And then anyway, come over. And it was UFC 2. And that's the first time I ever saw Ken Shamrock.
Wow, and yeah.
And then you fast forward a few. Then we started watching all the UFCs. Then I just remember Shamrock being like, looking so cool. And then he came to train in Calgary, and Teddy's dad picked him up at the airport, and we went with him. And we're just sitting in the back of this van, and like, and here's the crazy thing. I had this exact moment last year. This exact moment happened again last year, 22 years later. I'm sitting behind Ken Shamrock in the van, just like staring at him. At the time, Teddy and I still have like the mushroom haircut. Yeah. Shortly after that, we went with the short, spiky hair. Obviously, Davey influence, but very much Ken Shamrock influence. I just remember we were just staring and kind of in awe. Then I remember he's working out upstairs, and we had the ring set up there. And Teddy and I go in the ring and like kind of pretending to wrestle, but really just watching like what workout is Ken doing over there? Or we're pretending that we're wrestling. We weren't doing any wrestling whatsoever. Last year we were going to Europe and yeah. I had a connection in Chicago. And who do I see at the gate? Ken Shamrock. And I was like, now it's kind of one of those awkward things. Do I say like, hey, Ken, I'm TJ, or hey, Ken, I'm TJ or Tyson. Like, I should have said something, but I didn't say anything. And I just was like, Ken Shamrock's on this flight from Kentucky to Chicago. It's so funny. And dude, his seat was right in front of me. And so, like, I'm just thinking of like 16-year-old me with Ken Shamrock sitting behind Ken. I was like, oh my God, here we are. We're in the same spot. I'm sitting behind super jacked Ken Shamrock.
Yeah. He had those the big boots.
In 2019. Yeah.
Crazy.
And then I really should have said something to him because like the fact that he sat right in front of me and how ironic it was that it was this exact same situation as it was in 1997 is so bizarre.
Wow.
And my weird, as you said, like my weird memory and stuff, it just was so bizarre.
Yeah. Did you see the UFC documentary on the Lion's Den?
I haven't.
It's really good, but it's just because obviously like he was renowned for running the Lion's Den, but just the way they trained, especially in those early days of MMA, and that they were just like trying to kill each other. It's just some of the best guys in the world. And they were like sparring hard every single day, pretty much. Really good.
And those old days were so crazy, right? Cause they're doing like a tournament style. So like now like you're specifically training for who you're fighting and that person's style and all these other things. But then if you maybe could do that for the first round fight, the first one in the tournament, maybe if there was enough footage. Then round two, you don't know who you're getting. And then the finals, if somebody could get hurt, now you're fighting an alternate that nobody's even like, it's such crazy stuff happened in those early UFCs, man. It was literally the wild, wild west.
Right. I'll say still like one of my highlights of coming into work is just now there's UFC cards every single Saturday. So it's always like trying to find you and like, what do you think about like whatever happened. I know you're friends with like Cody Garbrandt too. So it's just, I love picking your brain about that stuff because I love MMA as well.
Yeah. You and I always have some pretty good talks about it all the time.
I'd get messed up. We always talk about people who laughed at us and tried to say, oh, New Day shouldn't be a thing. But you're the person who's outwardly always been yelling at us that you're going to try to break us up.
Yeah. It worked.
Obviously 100% as a joke.
100%.
I have been plotting this for over 5 years now. Yes.
It's also one of my favorite things about you.
You're good of friends. You guys have too good of a bond. So I decided to flex my power. It didn't work last time. I tried it a different way this time. And I think I helped get you guys drafted to separate shows. Yeah. Of course. The beginning of the end right now.
Right. After the draft, TJ walks in. He's like, yes, finally. Finally.
It's too emotional. It was so good. Yeah, it was not the time for that.
Yeah. It was a good break.
So I'm saying this prior to you guys doing that segment on SmackDown. Then I watch you guys do this like awesome segment of, I was like, oh my God, obviously I know they know I'm joking. They know I'm joking. What if there's one person who doesn't? And I always take that risk when I do my weird, whether it's my backstage commentary. I'm not able to do as much anymore. I'm too busy doing stuff. I wish I could help provide it, but I just can't at the moment, but I'll find a way to bring it back.
It's missed. It's missed.
We had this conversation with Claudio, but we always look back to, and this is wild that it was 6 years ago, over 6 years ago, but we always look back to how instrumental you and Claudio were in getting us over, getting us to make the switch to being heels. Because of that, we talk about it so often, so it's burned in my brain, but that European tour, it was perfect. If it was anyone else that we were paired up with, it wouldn't have worked because the crowd wouldn't have, they loved you guys. And you felt like kind of like the people's tag team, in my opinion. It's two guys who had probably should be in a much better spot than they had been over the years because they're incredible in the ring. And you guys worked so well together and were so beloved in Europe. And our stuff was so rocky. But I just remember the magic of the staring across from the ring. Hey, are we switching this?
Like I said,
we talked to Claudio about this, but I'd love to hear your perspective on how that was for you during that period.
Oh man, so like I absolutely love this story. I love this story. So we just wrestled on SmackDown in Dallas, and then we went to the European tour. And the first day, I don't know if everybody realizes like how our travel works, but we wake up early in the Wednesday morning, and we fly all through Wednesday. And with the time change and how long it takes to travel, you end up landing in Europe and it's Thursday morning. Well, we have a show that night. So everybody's tired. Nobody's on a proper adjustment of the schedule. And you're not going to, because we're going to keep traveling and be in different time zones. And those European tours, it's a lot of camaraderie with the boys, and it becomes the most fun time. But it could go and be absolutely miserable if you were to allow it to, because you're not really sleeping well. Anyway, I feel like we were all pretty tired. Natty was on the outside and Woods on the outside. We come out there, they boo you guys, they cheer us. And I thought like, okay, like I've seen this before, but we can get them. I remember doing like a couple of things and it wasn't going away. It wasn't shifting. I remember like, for example, that first night I hid behind Natty and they cheered and I was like, okay. That's the reaction tonight. How can I switch this? I don't know if I can. And we just switched it on the fly and went with you guys as the heels and us as the baby faces. And it was so much fun, because then the next day it's like, okay, but is Nottingham going to react the same way as Belfast? We don't know. And you guys weren't purposely coming out there and cutting promos to turn them heel. I remember being in Poland on that tour, and it was the first time we'd ever been in that town, and they were 7 weeks behind in terms of TV and the delay. And you guys, the thing is, you guys would go out first. You guys would cut this promo, a very babyface promo about being positive and smiles and, you know, clapping's infectious and all that.
Infectious.
And then we came out, and then they booed you guys and cheered us. But I just, every night was cool because we didn't know if it'd be that same reaction. It was so much fun, man. It kept us on our toes. And like you said, originally we were supposed to wrestle the Usos for that entire tour. And right. Jay got hurt. And then we were supposed to wrestle. Originally, you guys were only on half the tour or something
like
that.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that too. Yeah. And then we got put on the whole.
Oh, yeah, because I couldn't float.
Because you couldn't float. That's why
yes.
Us got hurt. If you would have been able to float.
So I'll back it up. So I dove out of the ring and Us caught me. And since I was later told, since I was unable to float like some other people who can dive, that's why I landed on his show. Oh, yeah. So have you ever seen TJ dive? Yeah. See how TJ floats? I said, no. Well, he floats. And then he walked away. And I was like, I didn't know defying gravity was an option.
He wasn't joking either. He wasn't like teasing you. Why don't you learn to float, kid? He was dead ass.
My God, I remember that so well. It was in Detroit, and we got pulled aside into like one of the side like hockey locker rooms in the Red Wings, and I remember like, you know, we won't drop a name on him, but you didn't know how to float. You didn't float. And then he leaves the room and we're all just sitting there looking at each other like, did this really just happen? Like, is there an ability? Did I miss out on something? Was there an ability that I should have gained to be able to control gravity? Yeah. I miss out? Like,
I must have been sick that week at SCW. I didn't have the floating classes.
Yeah.
I've never been in those float tanks.
Yeah, that's what it is. Oh, I got to load up on salt water before I go out.
I did a float tank one time and it worked, I guess.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. Save 20% at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I remember a live event, like maybe a week after, and it was something to do with like, I think it was us, it was me, myself and Cesaro against you guys, against maybe like the primetime players. And the same person was the producer on the live event, which he's not very often. I remember he was like, hey, we're going to just try to, let's switch something around. Let's eliminate New Day. Like you guys, it's elimination. He's eliminate New Day first. I want to see what you guys can get out of the primetime players. And I remember like, obviously, you know, justifiably so, but Woods is a little bit on the defensive. I remember like Woods pulled me aside and was like, hey, what was that about? Was he saying like that we're not good? Is there, he's like, cause the dive was literally like the week before. And I was like, no, that's not what he told me. I don't know if that's the intentions, but what he told me was that they just want to see what we could get out of New Day, but I mean, out of primetime players. But what's interesting is that it was literally like a week or two after that dive. Like, why your mind is going there? Obviously,
like, I was freaking out.
It's over.
Oh my God.
And the best part, if we were to go way, way, way back and we were to sit down with Jay, if you remember that day when putting it all together, Jay kept saying, hey guys, can I get some help on this catch? Can we build like a little bit of a pile? And for whatever reason, it kept getting ignored and we were talking about all this other stuff. And Jay must have asked two or three times. He literally did. But it never gets answered. It just like we get into talking about the other stuff. I think there might have been another pile for another big dive or two dives, maybe the Matadors or something. So it just is Woods diving onto Jay one-on-one, which, of course, if you have more people, it does make it easier for all the parties involved. And so I remember Jay, you know, we're in that room. He's hurt. And he just looked at me. He's like, he doesn't want anybody else to be sad, you know? So he kind of like smiles like, hey, Oos, I kept asking to build a pile.
Gosh, that's so crazy, man. Like so many stars have to align for that to happen. Cause who knows, you know, and I know we talked about it with the Cesaro episode, but like if you know what I mean, like Jay doesn't get hurt, you know, if we don't get booked.
Which I'm still sorry. I still feel very bad about that.
Sorry, Oos, you know he's listening. So but if you know we don't get booked against you guys in the match, then we don't get the same reactions, like none of this happens. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I don't know. I feel like I talk about that like just like how it trips me out that things have to happen exactly the way that they did in order for them to be the way they are now. So I don't know. It just trips me out.
I agree with you. Like that's true. It's like, why did all these things happen that it happened that way? Because then what's cool is we do the full 2-week tour. So just because we did that full 2-week tour of the audience booing you guys and cheering us, doesn't mean when we get back home and we get back to doing things normal, doesn't mean that that's going to be the case. Because we wrestled you guys in Philly on the kickoff for Royal Rumble, and same kind of thing where they cheered us and booed you, and they told us just keep going, don't like just act like it's not happening. Which I understand that mindset, because the bigger picture is, yeah, Philly might have booed today, but maybe next week that's over with and everybody's cheering you guys. But anyway, then we wrestle you guys in Chicago at Extreme Rules, and the company goes with it, and we do the title switch, and not only the title switch, but we also kind of did the double switch. And so it was cool that it translated and that it carried over, that it wasn't just this thing kind of lost in time in Europe that we kind of talked about. It's a thing that later on translates to pay-per-view and TV. So it and then, you know, you guys blow up and you guys, you know, go on your own course.
Well, even backtracking a bit, like you and Claudio were just kind of, weren't even really supposed to be a team really moving forward, right? It was just kind of a random, like, hey, let's just throw these guys together right now. And you just clicked right away. I don't know if you guys were friends before and you just knew that this chemistry would work, but you guys were just incredible. I hate watching my stuff, but I remember watching the match from Chicago, and you guys are so incredibly smooth together. It's like you had been training together and had been working on being a tag team for years.
Yeah, so same kind of thing. Like, we had good chemistry as opponents. I wrestled Cesaro's debut on the main rosters against me. But I don't know why. Yeah, we were thrown together in that gauntlet. I believe it's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We wrestled you guys in that gauntlet.
That was debut, wasn't it?
That's right. That's
our Raw debut.
Raw debut.
Yeah. We debuted on SmackDown on Black Friday. Never forget.
Yeah, Friday. Never forget. Coming up.
Yeah, our first Raw.
Is we pin you guys? Like, there's some interference with Stardust and Goldust in that match. They were already maybe you guys already eliminated them. Then there was some kind of thing, and we eliminate you guys, and then the Usos eliminate us, and then the next day we wrestle you guys on SmackDown in like a pretty short match.
But again, to that point, I'll never understand how you remember exactly where we were, who we were. So when you started going through, Goldust Stardust, and then you eliminated them, we eliminated you.
Also,
you eliminated
us.
I don't remember what we did last night.
I will forget until like all of a sudden it gets brought up, or I step into when I walk into a building, I usually get hit with like, okay, I did this here or this. Or I did this, but these other guys that did all this crazy thing happened here. And I just started getting hit with like so many memories.
Yeah. So that used to be one thing that I really enjoyed about being on the road with you, because obviously like you've got so many memories with other guys, and I was kind of you and me becoming close. This was a fairly new thing at that point, but just as soon as you walk in, you would say like, oh, this happened here and this happened here. Then everybody else around would pop like, oh yeah. And they start telling stories. And it's like, how are you always the match that ignites the whole flame every time?
I don't know. I mean, I'm glad I do. Like when I got hurt with my neck injury, literally being away from the talent was the hardest part of that time. And not being able to, like you said, like kind of be that match that sparked something. Or like when I came back as a producer, Dustin Wallace told me that he was just talking about me that week before. He was at a Full Sail taping for NXT, and he was in that auditorium. And he said he was sitting with some 205 guys, and he said it was really, really quiet. And he said, man, you guys don't understand, like, when Tyson was here doing NXT, like, this auditorium, if it ever got this quiet, that's when he would start creating noise. Yeah. And, like, it would never be this quiet if Tyson were here. And it just was, like, that was kind of my thing. Like, I'd wait for it to kind of get quiet. I felt it was getting kind of quiet and almost awkward. I had to, even if everybody thought I was an idiot, I had to break that, at least for the room, and everybody else could, you know, laugh, and, you know, maybe conversations amongst each other would start, but everybody was pretending like we had to sit and watch NXT in complete and utter silence and listen to every single word that we heard on commentary. Like, guys, we can talk and we can laugh and we can, believe it or not, I mean, let me do it, but I can make fun of the matches going on in the ring. No
problem. Totally unfiltered, man. Oh, man. But yeah, you kind of touched on a little bit earlier. Well, we talked about how, you know, you do it all, right? And, you know, from being in the ring, being so smooth, you know, I feel like you're like the prime example of somebody who, no matter what they were given, you always were able to take that and knock it out of the park, regardless of like who you were working and like the talent level. You always made the match like mean something. That, so I'll go off to a little bit of a tangent here. But there was a story, we were in the Scope, and it was Christmas, you know, tribute to the Troop show. And I remember earlier, yes, this is my dream. Earlier in the day, we were like, you know, there's like rumors about like, oh, there's going to be a reindeer. I think Mick Foley's going to be Santa Claus, and then some of the talent's going to be reindeer. And we're like, oh my God, no one wants to do that. Like, who's going to do that? So then all of a sudden, like the way I remember it is like, we look and I see you in the full reindeer costume, and you're pushing the sleigh, and you look over at me, and we make eye contact. You go, this is my dream. And just a big smile on your face, and knowing like what was going on inside your mind. And like, just again, like the fact that you're probably the most like talented pure wrestler on the roster, and here you are as a reindeer pushing a sleigh in the Scope in North Carolina or South Carolina, wherever it is, and just doing it with a smile on your face, you know. So, you know, kudos to you for being able to like to do that, you know.
I was definitely a bit facetious, no doubt. And here's the thing: like, I can argue it and debate it, and believe me, that day I didn't, but there have been times I have. And kind of once it kind of becomes the final, like, this is what you're doing, then it's like, okay, well, Now I'm going to do it to the best of my abilities. But in a situation like that, it's like, oh, there's Kofi. He's a very good friend of mine. Let's see if I can at least make him laugh by pretending I'm having the time of my life. When the truth is, the 15-year-old me that was training in the dungeon is, I didn't train to be a reindeer.
Yeah, believe it or not.
You know what I'm saying?
So unbelievable.
I'm thinking this has to be the dumbest thing I could ever do. Then my mind starts thinking, well, wait a minute. Don't put that out there. They could find something worse. So, pretend to have the biggest smile on my face and pretend this is the greatest thing I've ever done. But it was not. But it's one of those things that now it just, you know, 2 days later, it was funny to talk about. In the moment, I was like, I'm a reindeer. But you look at it as me. I remember you taking a picture. Kofi takes a picture of backstage. Me, we're getting ready to go out. Me and the Usos. Yeah. And he's like, hey guys, and I see he's got his phone. Yeah. For those that don't know, Kofi is a sniper when it comes to sneaking pictures.
Incredible.
This one, he wanted to get our attention, so I remember flipping it off. That way, I was like, well, at least he won't post it on social media.
That's the defense.
That's it. So, oh my God, too much. So. Oh yeah.
Sorry, the scope is in Norfolk, Virginia, by the way. I don't want to offend the people.
I said North Carolina. So, okay.
Right, Virginia. Yeah.
I got the N right. N-O-R. Right.
Yeah, good job.
For whatever reason, the setup was this giant. It was so steep, the ramp, like so steep, that it actually was kind of hard as reindeer pushing this sleigh and not letting it get out of control. The sled, whatever it was on wheels, was so heavy. Like, coming down that ramp, we actually were like, we're supposed to be like we're pushing, but we're actually all holding to like stop the thing from like steamrolling us.
You know, you talked about it too, about your neck injury. And I feel like, you know, and you can go into like the details of it and everything, but it was very serious. Like a lesser man probably wouldn't have made it out. But I feel like since it was you, you know, the fact that you have, number one, got through that neck injury, the fact that you overcame it. And now I see you in the ring, you know, on Instagram and stuff, doing like springboards and everything again. And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, so just like that story in and of itself, you've obviously had a story in getting to WWE, but you talk about somebody who has broken their neck and here you are.
Yeah. I mean, so it's funny. I don't know if it's the injury or my age or a combination. Like whenever I get complimented, I almost get super emotional. It's like, if I listen to a podcast and Arn was saying like nice things about me, I was just like driving my car and I just started like almost tearing up. It's weird. I don't know if it, because of how high up it is, I don't know if it's like on that brain. I don't know, man. I honestly don't know. So you guys saying such nice things, like I keep trying to like, not really get into it. I keep trying to kind of deflect it, but I don't have to. I truly, truly appreciate it. With my neck, it was insanity. And when they finally, when they got the MRI results at the hospital in San Antonio, all of a sudden, you know, they don't want to alarm me right away. So I'm just kind of sitting there. And of course, being the friend that he is and the person that he is, Cesaro's there for like, he's there for almost all of this whole thing. Of course, Natty's there. And it's almost like a SWAT team style. They came in, they're like, sir, don't move. Lay down. We got to cut your shirt off. And I was like, I can take my... They're like, no, you can't risk that. Your injury is so bad. Like a little, any kind of slight movement could be very catastrophic. And I was like, obviously my neck hurt and I was in a collar at the time. And I just remember thinking like, I think these guys are exaggerating a little bit. I know that my neck's hurt. I know that. I know my body very well. But maybe they're just using extra precaution. And this ambulance takes me to a hospital that specializes in cervical injuries. And they do the MRI and I have to wait all night for the results. I'm in like the hospital, the basement of this hospital. I'm not actually in a room yet. And they told me they wanted to do an MRI because they didn't believe the results of the first one. And they just thought, they said, they're like, here's the thing, 99% of the people, if they are saying what you have, the injury that you have, they're like 1% of people survive. So, and Cesaro being Cesaro, he's so, he said, well, hold on. You don't know this guy. He might be the 1%. You guys don't understand what you're dealing with here. This injury could be what the first place thinks it is. He might be the 1%. And so now So now I go through the whole night not knowing what is my injury. The first place said it's this. This place is saying they don't think so. That would be too risky and there's no way I would survive it. So maybe it's somewhere in the middle. Doctor comes in the morning. Literally, Cesaro went to the hotel for a few hours. He left maybe at 5 in the morning. Is literally when Marfano leave is 5 a.m. And then Cesaro's there at like 9 a.m. with Chipotle and Starbucks. Classic combo. And like, this guy knows my order. Natty doesn't know my order. Cesaro knows my order. Like, that's all you need to know when it comes to what a human he is. And the doctor, literally, Cesaro, it was like something out of the movie. Like, Cesaro just got there. Then this guy comes in, the doctor, and he's like, hey, we got your MRI results. They are what that first place showed. He's like, I want to do emergency surgery. First he said, your wrestling career is over. I want to do emergency surgery. And I remember thinking like, wow, this guy, he might be a hell of a surgeon, but he might need to learn how to speak to people.
Yes, in bedside manner.
Right.
And I just remember like, during that night, I'd already kind of come to the conclusion that I probably wouldn't wrestle again. I mean, my neck was in so much pain and I just even like the things that they were saying kind of just like rattling in my head and thinking it all through. So then I look over, I see Cesaro kind of wiping a tear away. And I was like, damn, it's hitting him. I'm okay at the moment. And Natty was like, hold on, are you the best? And he's like, well, I'm not the best, but I can do it. And Natty said, no. With WWE, we have access to the best. And with injury at this level, only the best is going to touch him. And so then I was in San Antonio. That was Tuesday morning. They airlift me Thursday. So it was 2 days of trying to get an airlift arranged to bring me. Funny enough, now he's in Phoenix, my surgeon, but he was here in Tampa. So for 2 days, I was waiting on an airlift. And that's kind of when things really got broken down to me. Like I wasn't on any painkillers or any kind of IV or anything. They would come in every couple hours and check my vitals, my heart rate and my blood pressure. And I finally was like, so all Tuesday they said they're working on an airlift and they're injecting me with this stuff to thin my blood in case I do fly for the elevation. Wednesday, same deal. Now it's Wednesday about 4 p.m. Texas time. So I know it's 5 Eastern. I know the workday is basically over. I know that I'm spending another night in this hospital and I'm not going to Tampa that day. So I started kind of getting a little bit irritable. And I remember complaining and saying, I was trying not to be too crazy, but I just remember being like, hey, like, no offense, I'm not trying to be rude, but like, you guys are checking my vitals and I appreciate you guys taking care of me, but this bed isn't comfortable. And this little TV kind of sucks. Like, I have a nice TV at home and I have a nice bed at home. Natty will check my vitals and, you know, I'll drive home or I'll just get on a commercial flight. And they're like, no, sir, you can't. And I said, well, you actually can't hold me here. I'm not a hostage. And then this woman came in and that's when she was like, sir, please, your injury is similar to Christopher Reeves. It's your C2, hit your spinal cord. She's like, the truth is you just suffocated to death right there. For some reason you didn't. And she's like, 5% of people who have this injury survive. Of that 5, 99% are paralyzed, complete like a quadriplegic. No use of any limbs. And I just like, and then it really sunk in. There's one thing when like to hear my wrestling career was over, I'd already kind of come to that conclusion. But the fact that she broke it down like that, it all really hit me. And I was like, you know what? While we were talking, did you guys switch this bed? Because this bed is so comfortable. This TV you guys put in is amazing. And I just was like, however long it takes, it takes. And that's when I realized that like it wasn't really in my hands. And although I was in pain and I was in discomfort, it was a lot better than it could have been. And so I just was like, okay, like if this takes 2 weeks to get me an airlift out of here, I understand the process now. And that was kind of where we were at that time.
So going from a situation where you're obviously going through this stuff mentally, obviously going through it all physically, being, like we said, like I've said, like the workhorse that you are, like, how does it feel? The fact, like being able to jump in the ring and do springboards and do all this stuff. Is that something that you thought, oh, maybe I can work this hard to get there? Or was there ever a point where you're just kind of like, this is rough. I might need to chill, but like you don't chill. So like, how'd you get through that whole process?
I mean, yeah, it was just a long process. Like after surgery, they told me And they said like a very key phrase that I've told other people who get injured. Like my other injury prior to that was I tore my knee, but that one's different because I can do rehab and kind of like I kicked, they told me that it would be 9 to 12 months for my knee. And I got cleared at 6.5 months because I could kind of, obviously your body has to take to it, but I could kind of control how much rehab and therapy I did and how much I take care of myself. With my neck's a different story. They fuse a bone in my neck and then I just have to let the fusion take place. And the way by doing that is to actually not have much movement, very much the opposite of what my knee was. So it was a lot of me not being allowed to do a lot physically. And so it was very much the opposite of what I like to do. So it was definitely a process, especially mentally in terms of like just telling myself that like, all right, not doing anything today is actually to my benefit, which is again, not how I'm wired. and to go from working 5 days a week on the road to zero, I had that happen before with my knee, but with my knee, I knew I was coming back to wrestle. I knew like, I'm going to come back. I'm going to get cleared. I remember like with my neck, for example, and of course it's like, here I am name dropping, but when you get hurt with your neck, all of a sudden, like, you make new friends that also have had neck injuries, like Kurt Angle. All of a sudden, I was a big fan of his, but I didn't know him. And then all of a sudden, he gets my phone number and he's calling me and texting me. And Steve Austin, same thing, because I was in Texas and he was having his people look at my surgeons that I was possibly going to go to. He called me up one day, Steve, and he was like, "How come you're?" He said, "Hey kid, I saw the picture. How come they went through the back? And how come it's?" And I was like, "Well, because my injury is the equivalent of like my mouth. They can't go through the front." Like, this sounds so weird, but the normal neck fusion in wrestling is like C5, C6, C7 in that realm. Mine is my C1 and C2 are fused. The very top two discs in your vertebrae are fused for me. And so so I knew with it being that high that the chances of wrestling again were very, very, very slim. I remember maybe 6 months after surgery, like laying in my bed and trying to lay on my stomach, like I'm face down, and I didn't have the range of motion to actually put my head all the way to the side. I remember thinking like, wow, I really probably can never wrestle again. Like, how could I ever take a face bump ever again if I can't even turn my head to the side? Like, there were little things like that. And I just, so then to like, then when I came back as a producer, I'm kind of like in the ring showing talent how to do something without fully doing it. But then like once in a while, I might sneak something in there. Like, one time, Finn told me that he didn't know how to take the bump over the top, like a Royal Rumble elimination. And I was like, "You've never done it?" And I was like, I hook the rope with my left arm and I hop over and I push off the apron with my right. And I was like, "Watch, I'll show you." And then I did it just like instinct, just did it. I remember like Road Dogg looking at me, he's like, "Are you supposed to be doing that?" And I was like, "Well, probably not, but like it was okay. It did nothing."
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those things, like now that I have my ring and I kind of train people or put people through some workouts in there, I've never taken a bump and I won't, but like the day they set up the ring, that was the first time I did a springboard in 5 years. I just was like, well, this ring is now mine in my little privacy of my place. So like, let me just try one springboard. And if I slip, then I know it's definitely not meant to be. I did it. And I was like, okay. Like it,
still
good. And I want to see like if the landing would feel weird or jarring, and it didn't. I felt okay.
Yeah. So for you, is the plan now, what I really want to ask is like, hey, are you thinking about coming back at all? I know you're such an incredible teacher, and I always say you have one of the best wrestling minds on earth, and you're incredible in that role, but do you ever kind of play with the idea of coming back?
So I kind of did. I wanted to at least write the final page on that book of me being an in-ring performer. And I thought, what better way than the Royal Rumble in terms of I wouldn't have to get slammed. I already showed Finn how to get eliminated. So I know I can get things like that. And I remember, you know, talking with Vince about it, and he said, "You need an answer today, or can you give me time to think about it?" I said, "Of course, take your time. Take as much time as it needs. It's not a rush. I can even do," like when I was just presenting it to him, I said, "I can do next year's Rumble. It doesn't have to be in 4 weeks. In this one last year in Phoenix, it can be anytime." And he called me one day and just said, like, they put a lot of thought into it and that we would try to control everything on our end, but what if something outside of our realm were to happen and it were to undo all the good that has happened over the last 2 years in terms of me being a producer? And physically, I do feel very, very good. And his thought was, why risk that if it's like, so don't ask me why, but in my mind, the visual that played out when he was kind of saying this to me was like, imagine I'm standing on the steps, like about to come into the ring. And just for whatever reason, if you're just throwing out some crazy stuff, like a fan jumps the railing and pushes me from behind and it whiplashes me and my neck's super messed up. And so I remember thinking like, okay, I offered this to Vince. He gave 2 or 3 weeks solid thought to it. And this was his answer. And like I said, then I had that visual, then which is very weird and plays to my weird, not that this was a memory, but like I had this visual in my mind of a guy coming and pushing me. 3 months later, what happens at the Hall of Fame? Some dude slides in and takes Brett and Natty down. And I was like, oh my God, this is almost like what I envisioned happening to me. And I remember being like, almost taking that as a sign, like, okay, you know what? I am doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Yes, it would be cool if I could write the final page of my in-ring career, that chapter. But I can't, I don't think. So when Vince told me no, so the weeks prior, I started to have those, and then maybe you guys have always had them, maybe you haven't realized because they haven't gone away, or maybe, but I have these, like, as a wrestler, I always have these anxiety dreams, or like, I wake up like, oh, it's just a dream, like I can't find my gear,
we didn't
have time to put it together, or none of my stuff looks good, it's all terrible, or like, I've had this dream where like, I can't do anything right, and don't ask me why, but Randy Orton's laughing at me.
Which he might be.
It's just always Randy.
So when Vince told me that he really put a lot of thought into it, but he just couldn't clear me, I'd say I was like 40% disappointed and 60% relieved. Like, I literally, as we're talking, like, I felt that anxiety leave my system. So I don't have that anymore, but I do get a lot of fulfillment out of the matches that I produce. Almost, and if it's on special occasions when the matches are like really firing, but I can almost get the exact same fulfillment when I see two other talents or four or six other talents have a great match that I would get if it were me. Like if it were me, say it's like me against Kofi, and I feel like me and Kofi have a really good match. Me and Kofi are going to enjoy that match. Our producer might enjoy that match. We might get a few compliments from some of our peers. And then it's kind of over. Where like, if I work with, say, for example, six of the women, and they come back and they're super ecstatic and it went way better than they expected. And it went way better than anyone backstage had expected. Now it kind of lives on a little bit more than if it's just, I don't know if this is like a weird ego thing, but it's kind of like, oh, TJ, oh, he's supposed to have good matches. If I didn't have a good match, then it'd be like pointed out. But if I had a good match, I'm not saying a great match, but if I had a good match, it'd be like, well, yeah, that's your job.
Well, I think that you have an incredible perspective on all of these things that we've talked about, life especially, and I don't feel that we necessarily get the credit that you deserve for that. So I want to just put that into the ether right now. Everybody needs to respect this man because he is the workhorse.
And dude, that's 2 years of sitting at home, not by myself, but like Natty's on the road full time, and that's just me being at home for 2 years. And literally, like, I miss being around everybody even more than I miss being in the ring. So like, now I'm allowed to be back around everybody in terms of being a producer. I don't have that in-ring part anymore in terms of me performing my match. Now it's other people performing a match that we kind of created. But I get to be around everybody, which was like, I don't want anyone else to go through that. But like, missing that for me was huge, and it sucked. I got my calendar maybe a week before I got hurt. I got my calendar for the next 3 months, and we were on, and it was probably against you guys, but it was Cesaro and I, our calendar. We were on everything for 3 months straight. We were on 5 days a week for the next 3 months. And then to go from that to zero is just a crazy thing to kind of, not only the injury physically, but to go through mentally. So believe me, I don't take being around the talent and being in the locker room, I don't take it for granted for 1 second anymore.
Definitely. Definitely. And to anybody who needed to hear that, make sure you put that in your brain. Remember what you got and appreciate it and the people around you.
We all like do take things for granted. And I'm going to take driving to work Friday for granted, I'm sure, at some stage. But like, when something happens, you do have a chance to kind of put it in perspective. You realize, oh, wait a minute. Everything's good. And another thing I realized is I don't like, for example, Kobe telling that reindeer story. And it's so funny now. Anything that kind of bothered me as a talent in that moment, looking back on it now, either I don't think about it, or like when I do, I laugh and you just kind of, you just remember the good things or the things that maybe weren't so good. You just laugh at them. Like losing a Brodus in 12 seconds that day annoyed me that I wasn't going to get any offense. And it was like, okay. But now looking back on it, like I just laugh about it because it's just kind of funny that Brodus beat me in 12 seconds.
You don't get paid by the hour. I tell people all the time.
Yeah.
No. Brock beat you in 8 seconds. I don't get paid by the hour. You know?
Yeah.
Well, TJ, unfortunately, that's all the time that we have with you today. But we appreciate you being on, man.
No, I appreciate you guys, man. Now you guys are going to think it's part of my plan to get you guys separated. But the cool thing is now I get to see you guys on Mondays and Fridays. Now that there is this separation like that. So that part's cool. It's not like, oh, okay, I only see New Day on Friday at SmackDown. Now I get to see at least 2/3 on Monday and then 1/3 on Fridays. But it's cool. It's cool that it's kind of broken up like that because I have a good relationship, very good relationship with the three of you.
Yeah. Definitely. I always say this, we got to have you on again because I want to dig into your unfiltered commentary on matches. Yeah. One of the highlights just of my life. Where can they find you on social media? Keep up with you.
On Instagram at TJ Wilson 711. Cause that's, I couldn't get TJ Wilson. So I threw 711 cause that's my birthday. And on Twitter at TJ Wilson.
Nice. Nice. Kofi.
You can find me on the Twitter at True Kofi and on Instagram at The True Kofi. And I wanted to say real quick too, we didn't talk about Workhorse Fitness, okay? Which is TJ's supplement company.
Yeah,
I get all my supplements from TJ. You know, I do all of that. So pub up, you know what I'm saying?
Kofi's so funny. Like I was in the locker room last week, 2 weeks ago, and I walked by and I saw he had like BCAAs out by his bag and maybe the pre-workout. And like, I took a picture and sent it to my friend that I do the company with. And I said, dude, Kofi's the best. Like he's literally like putting it on display and like,
that's it.
A million appreciate
doing. Represent.
I appreciate it.
Of course.
Yeah, what's the website?
At Workhorse Fitness. Okay. The website is workhorsefitness.com.
Okay, dope. Boom. So if you got some needs, go ahead, check them out.
Yes, and we're always working on new things, new flavors. We have a green drink we're getting ready to put out. We have new flavors coming out. So it's always a work in progress. It's never complete.
E, where can they find you on socials?
I'm at WWE Big E on Twitter and on Instagram. Also, make sure to cop our New Day podcast t-shirt on WWE Shop. Make sure to cop the New Day charity tee. All the proceeds go to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. You can find the link on my Twitter. It is my pinned tweet and it's in my Instagram bio. Also, make sure to watch Laser Wolf Season 1 on HBO Max. Hey. It's an incredible, funny show. And it's a very quick, enjoyable watch. And Season 2 is coming on Adult Swim.
You can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at Austin Creed Wins. You can check out the YouTube channel where we're playing hella games. It's called Up, Up, Down, Down. Just go search in YouTube. And you can check out UUDDShop.com for all your Up, Up, Down, Down apparel and swag needs. Lastly, make sure you're using the hashtag New Day Pod when you're talking about this on social so people understand what you just listened to and tell them how much you loved it. And make sure to tell your friends they can listen to this podcast wherever they listen to their podcast. Just go to the search bar, type in New Day and click the pink picture with the three black guys' faces on it. That's us. If you're on Apple Podcasts, go ahead, give us that 5-star because it helps your boys out, algorithms, whatnot, and you get more of this. Thank you for listening and make sure to always and forever keep it tight. I'm going to go with the up, up, down, down.
Hold on a second.
I'm just telling you, you forgot what show you're on for a second.